right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. All right. It is Triple Play Thursday. Get your request in. One artist, three songs. Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And there you go. We are going to talk about movies and TV shows and things that make you cry. And we're going to admit to things that make us cry. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. And I will host another aggravating Saturday Night Live quiz for Dan and Esmeralda. That's what's coming up. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. It is time for our bi-weekly visit with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He talks with us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. Let's welcome Dan to the show to talk TV. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Nick.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Not bad. Not bad at all. But it's a lot to talk about, as usual. I do want to mention Twin Peaks is coming to a close on Sunday because they're going to do the final two episodes back to back. Am I right in that?
I believe so. It's definitely coming to an end on Sunday. I'm no longer sure how many hours there are because I'm now confused by whether the first two counted as two or whatever, but it's definitely coming to an end on Sunday.
Okay. A couple of things I wanted to mention about it. I just think it's been fantastic, as you know. I thought there were for last week's episode inspired me to actually applaud on my couch while watching it. At a precise moment, I don't want to give it away if people have to play catch up, but there was a precise moment and one hilarious line of dialogue that just caused me to just break out in spontaneous applause. I've been loving the way it's going. But I do want to mention, and you actually tweeted about this, the week before, 2 weeks ago, the episode and the handling of the log lady, we're going to be talking about what things make you cry. That made me cry. I thought that was kind of astonishing, actually. And I know that you tweeted about it as well.
No, the show has been so compassionate, especially to the older actors in the cast. And it's been remarkable to see kind of the emotion at times simply taking precedence over the, I don't know, whatever the narrative is at this point in the season. I don't even know. But yeah. There's a finale coming, and I don't know what is supposed to happen. I don't know what we're looking for to occur in order to be satisfactory. Like, I think the end of last week's episode could have been enough of an ending for me, and I think maybe I could have been happy with the week before, and that might have been happy enough for me. So I don't know what that ending is, but the log lady stuff was beautiful. I thought the stuff with Dougie and his family last week, without spoiling specifics of it, I thought that was rather beautiful and touching. I think there's been a lot of those kinds of moments, and those have definitely been special. But again, I don't know what I'm looking for in Sunday's finale. I don't know what would cause me to go, my God, that was exactly how it was supposed to end. Right. And I also don't know what would cause me to do anything other than go, well, that was, you know, excitingly perplexing.
Right. Which is a good way to describe what's been happening. But I was really moved by how they handled the log lady thing. And, you know, it's interesting that three of the actors passed away, you know, since they finished filming. Every time I see Miguel Ferrer, I get a little verklempt, you know. And so they handled that really well. And, you know, incorporating some of the stuff from Fire Walk With Me, especially the, you know, like bringing the David Bowie character back in that weird, strange fashion that they did.
Very strange.
But I thought that was kind of neat too. So I'm just loving it, and I know that it ends on Sunday, and I'm kind of sad that it's going to end. But I really think it's been a great season.
So. Definitely, the bringing back the David Bowie stuff has been sort of a reminder of how much Fire Walk With Me really has been essential. I think that a lot of people knew that it was going to be relevant, that it couldn't be ignored, but my goodness, it really has been very, very important to this entire season. Again, not necessarily knowing what counts as important or not important, but definitely Fire Walk With Me has been a thing that has to be part of your knowledge in order to I guess, recognize what things are references to. I don't think you understand them better.
I had friends, a couple of buddies of mine were like, you know what, I want to catch up on Twin Peaks because I want to watch the new season. And so we're going to watch the first two seasons. And I'm like, don't skip Fire Walk With Me. If you've not, because it's the mythology of Fire Walk With Me is massively important to the third season. So that's, you're absolutely right. But anybody who wants to catch up on Twin Peaks, do not ignore Fire Walk With Me. It's essential in order. Well,
like, I think you'd be better off skipping the first season of the show than skipping Fire Walk With Me. It's sort of surprising. I would say vastly more important Fire Walk With Me has been than the things that actually happened in the season of Twin Peaks that most people usually think of when they think of Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens on Sunday. It's always, it's always a mystery when it happens. Okay. You've got some more Take Me to the Pilots that
so
you
many.
Put together. So many of them. I want to ask about a few of them. I happen to really, really like Bobby Moynihan a lot. And I was sad to see him leave SNL, but I'm glad he's got a sitcom, and it looks kind of like an interesting setup. Tell everybody what Me, Myself, and I is.
The setup is that it tells the story of a guy's life in three time periods, one in which he's a young teenager in the 90s, one in which he's Bobby Moynihan basically today, and one in which he's John Larroquette. 20 some odd years into the future, and it kind of shows how lessons learned in different phases of life inform you as you age in different ways. It's a little bit How I Met Your Mother, it's a little bit This Is Us, and it is a good idea. It's just not a very good execution, and this is the kind of thing where if you have a big idea like this, if you're not able to pull it off in the pilot, if you're not able to do a pilot that executes your proof of concept, I don't believe it's possible to do it on a week-to-week basis. I don't think it's possible to say, well, we couldn't get it right with basically our whole life to write this script, but we're going to get it right every week when it's a room full of writers facing deadlines with network pressures and notes. So I am unfortunately not all that high on this one. I think it's an interesting idea. It's a very good cast, but it didn't pay off in any real way for me.
And it's a half an hour show, correct?
It is a half hour show. It's a single cam show. It's not a multicam, and CBS has had difficulty with shows that aren't multicams, basically. And so I'm not overwhelmingly optimistic, but who knows? It could get better. They could lock into something as they go forward.
Who's behind it? Who's the creatively behind it?
It's not a name, which is also interesting because CBS sort of has most of its success with the big name people. And I mean, it's a writer with, respectable credits. I can't just go, oh, it's Chuck Lorre, or, oh, it's, someone who created it's the How I Met Your Mother guys, et cetera. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not kind of a brand name, so
it's
yeah, a little disappointing.
It's interesting because I'm a Big Brother fan, and I watch it all the time, and so I've been seeing a lot of commercials for the upcoming shows on CBS because they plug the hell out of them during every episode of Big Brother, and it was interesting that they didn't roll out the fact that Jaleel White was in it till like last week. they kept Urkel hidden until last week. There was the first time I saw Jaleel White's in this thing too. So I thought that was kind of interesting the way they rolled that out.
He's the best friend in the middle portion of the story, and I am ready for the Jaleel White renaissance. He had one episode of Survivor's Remorse last year in which he was just great, and I was feeling like he was an underutilized resource, and in this, he's not bad, definitely. You just don't come away going, my God, give me more of the man formerly known as Urkel. You don't go that way, and probably I would have loved to have come away going, my God, bring back Urkel forever, but
yeah.
Who knows?
Okay. All right. Well, that's a little disappointing to hear. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, and we are talking about TV. You can follow him on Facebook and the Twitter at The Fine Print. Did I just say the Twitter like a 90-year-old? The Facebook and the Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll talk more TV right after we take a break here for the news. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. Before we get back to our conversation with Dan Feinberg of the Hollywood Reporter, we're talking TV. Just want to say that all day today we're asking WGN radio listeners to participate in our Day of Giving to benefit the victims of Hurricane Harvey. Text HARVEY to 90999 to make your $10 donation to the American Red Cross, or you can call 855-999-GIVE. Standard message and data rates apply. Thank you very much for your generosity. It's the Day of Giving, so please give. Okay, let's get back to our conversation. Dan Feinberg is with us from The Hollywood Reporter, and we talk TV every couple of weeks, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Hi, Dan.
Howdy.
All right. Let's see. Let's talk another one of the Take Me to the Pilots. I don't really know what to make of the ads for this and reading a little bit about it, but it's Seth MacFarlane's new science fiction comedy called The Orville. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, you would definitely not know what to make of this based on the ads, which have been mostly edited to make them look like it's a very broad Seth MacFarlane comedy, and I don't know that most people, heck, I don't know that a lot of people understand that this is an hour-long show. It's not a half hour. It's not a sitcom. It's also not Galaxy Quest. It's Seth MacFarlane using basically the billions of dollars that he's brought into 20th Century Fox over the years, thanks to Family Guy and American Dad and even The Cleveland Show, and leveraging it to make sort of a very earnest with sometimes snarky jokes science fiction show in the vein of the original Star Trek to some degree. And it's hard to get a feeling, especially in the early episodes, of how you're supposed to be responding to a lot of things, because there are jokes and they're not really all that often funny. But there's also, you know, it's a let's go on a rescue mission of the week and visit a different alien species and all of that science fiction show. And
that's not at all what I thought it was. I thought it was a half hour sitcom wackiness. That's what I thought.
See, this is why I am letting people know. And this is what Fox is not doing. And I don't know whether it's going to be a bad thing in terms of how people are going to respond to this show, because it's not in any way but what it's being advertised as, and it's not in any way what Seth MacFarlane's pedigree really would suggest. Until you remember that this is also the Seth MacFarlane who brought Cosmos back to Fox, and you remember that he really does have this genuine geeky affection for things science fiction, and this is how he's parlaying it. And I think he could have parlayed it into much, much worse things. And good on him, I guess, for trying this as an alternative. It's hard to watch it and immediately know what to think about it. There are sort of Star Trek-y social issue things that are introduced in different episodes, and you go, is this something that Seth MacFarlane is really equipped to handle? And having seen a couple episodes, I'm not sure he is at all. I didn't hate the episodes I've seen, and I'll probably have a full review up on this next week because it's premiering really early. It's premiering September 10th. It's hard to get your mind around it, and all I can do is warn people what it is, and then that makes it easier for them to at least not expect something completely different.
Well, okay. that I'll have to adjust what I thought it was going to be for sure. There's no question about it. And then they're running this on Sunday nights then.
They're running it on Sunday nights at first, and then it's moving to a different night of the week, I think. I think they're running it on Sundays to start so that it can get some early season NFL bump, and then they'll move it to its regular time slot. Having already confused people by what it is as a TV show, they'll confuse people by what night of the week it's airing. It's not necessarily the best way to introduce a show, but, you know, who knows? If you're attempting to promote this, and it's from Seth MacFarlane, you've got to promote it as something that people are going to find recognizable for Seth MacFarlane. Also, and just another thing, he's not really a very good actor.
Yeah.
And he's the leading man here, and that's a problem, too. So
yeah.
Problems aplenty with the Orville.
Yeah. Now, but speaking of him not being a really good actor, have you seen Logan Lucky?
I have seen Logan Lucky, and I don't understand either why he was in it or why he was in it as a British guy.
I like the movie overall, but his character was just so weird. And you know, this was, we were talking about this the other week when it came out. I still don't really understand what Hilary Swank is doing in that movie. It was one of the weirdest performances that I've ever seen. Just so strange, and I couldn't wrap my mind around it. Although, and then despite the fact that it has had all these issues and problems, there were scenes in that movie where I was like doubled over with laughter. So I don't know.
I don't know that it holds, that for me at least, it held together as a full movie. But I agree with you that it definitely has moments. And I think I was tolerant of whatever Hilary Swank was doing, because I was like, oh, someone thought it would be funny to let Hilary Swank be the straight woman here, and there she is. She's just doing it. Yeah. And, you know, I don't feel like Hilary Swank works enough, so...
Yeah. I'm actually not criticizing her performance. I just thought it was a very weird performance, a likable performance, but a strange one that kind of stood out among what everybody else was doing. And so I don't know. But anyway, you know, you mentioned Seth MacFarlane, so I had to mention Logan Lucky.
Indeed.
Okay, so let's get back to some of the other shows that are coming up. Now, obviously, the one that I'm most excited about premieres on September 10th on HBO, and that's The Deuce. Have you seen the whole run?
I have seen the whole run of 8 episodes of The Deuce, and would like for it to have been more episodes of The Deuce, because 8 episodes is really not enough. If anyone has ever watched, well, I guess that's not actually true. I was going to say, 8 episodes is not enough for a David Simon production to introduce a whole ensemble and a whole world, but Show Me a Hero was 6 hours, and it did just fine with that. And The Corner was also a miniseries, and Generation Kill was a miniseries. So actually, he works just fine in miniseries form. It just happens that in 8 episodes here, I wanted a lot more of things, but what was there, I enjoyed quite a bit. I think it's a thoughtful, interesting look at a time period. It's a little bit like Vinyl, except much, much better. And I think some people are sort of having Vinyl-based concerns about it, because last time HBO went to New York City in the 70s, it didn't work out so well. Right. This works out much better.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm obviously looking forward to it, because anything with David Simon's name on it, I immediately like. And it's got a really amazing cast. And for people who might not know what it's about, tell everybody, you know, you mentioned that the time period was 70s New York, but what are the main conflict in the show?
It's 1971 New York City, and James Franco plays brothers bonded together by a similar mustache. One of them is responsible and trustworthy and runs a bar. The other one is kind of a ne'er-do-well, but they both find themselves gravitating towards the mob, as the mob is taking advantage of new laws and whatnot to expand the sexual recreation industry in the Times Square area, to include adult movies and also expanded prostitution, which, while not legal, is somewhat condoned by the police department that is in the process of dealing with corruption in much more troubling ways. So, yeah, that's what it is. A great cast. Maggie Gyllenhaal as a prostitute who takes an interest in the adult film industry. The great Chris Bauer. Many, many people from the David Simon world. I would say about a dozen cast members who have popped up between The Wire and I guess one or two Treme people and some Show Me a Hero people, et cetera, over the years. So he's got this great ensemble of people he's worked with, and it's fun to see them in this different context. And it's David Simon, it's George Pelicanos, it's Richard Price. It's just a great, great writing pedigree. The pilot was directed by Michelle McLaren, who's a great director. James Franco directed 2 episodes, and he's James Franco. It's really good. It's really promising. It's got a sort of really dirty, gritty, grimy feel, and you know, it's got lots of raunchy sex that will make you feel horrible because it's all exploitative and exploiting. But that's sort of the plot of the show. It's not exploiting the situations. It's about a world of exploiters, a world of people taking advantage of each other, and it's an interesting world. It's not a lovable world, but an interesting world.
I can't wait to see. If I'm not mistaken, I think you can watch the pilot on HBO Go or on the on demand.
Yes, the pilot, which is, I believe, around 80 minutes, is available on any of your various HBO outside platforms. So on demand, HBO Go, HBO Now, etc. It is 80-ish minutes. The next six episodes are all roughly in the hourly range, and then the finale is a little bit longer as well.
Okay. Can't wait, and I will be watching it before September 10th. I know that for a fact. So we're getting close to American Horror Story, Cult. And the trailer has been released, so we're getting a little bit more of an insight as to what it could be about. Now, has FX sent you the episodes yet?
They have sent a large number of episodes, and I can at least give a tease of my opinion. The embargo is up tomorrow, or this morning, rather,
yeah.
And I will have a review up and ready to go with The Hollywood Reporter. But yes, I have seen three episodes, which is a lot, given that last year Ryan Murphy and company sent out zero episodes and also wouldn't announce the title of the season and wouldn't say what it was about. And
right.
Everything was mysterious. And this year is much less mysterious. It's much more overt. It's much more of it. This year it's kind of it's a satire meets a home invasion thriller meets lots of killer clowns. And that's about with a little bit of the backdrop of the 2016 election, specifically the way that it has left everybody feeling discombobulated and alienated from the world around them. And it has left everybody feeling a new sense of fear and discomfort that maybe we didn't feel. And, well, okay, I don't want to say everybody. Some people probably feel just fine with the election. So, but lots of people.
Yeah.
Lots of people. And that's what it's about.
Okay.
So it's. I liked it, as in I watched three episodes in very short order and feel like I will watch a fourth. And sometimes with American Horror Story, that is not the way I feel.
Okay,
so
that sums it up for me, because I last, you know, about three episodes usually. And that's sort of my limit. That's where I usually stop almost every, except for the first season. The first season of American Horror Story was the only season I've watched all the way through, and fought my way through the last like three or four episodes.
So. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that they're trying to do with the election as a backdrop. I think it makes the allegory kind of clearer than maybe it has been in other seasons. And also I think the overall narrative is clearer. Like I think with Roanoke last season, I watched half the season. I have the rest of it on my DVR, but I couldn't tell you what the season was about. Like
yeah.
what they thought they were getting at, other than kind of the mix of true crime and found footage and layers of media and stuff. But I couldn't tell you why the season existed. And I can tell you why this season exists.
Okay.
So I think that's a plus.
Okay. All right. Great. People looking forward to that. That's the fifth that premieres, right? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the fifth.
Okay. Dan, hang on.
Sure.
There we go. Dan Feinberg is with us from The Hollywood Reporter, TV critic. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we got more TV to talk about after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and it is Triple Play Thursday, 1 hour, 3 songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. And right now, we are in the middle of our conversation, our biweekly conversation with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. We talk TV every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the Weekend Update Summer Edition SNL show. We briefly talked about the first episode of it the last time you were on. There have been two subsequent episodes since you've been on. What do you make of some of the stuff that's been on?
Last week's really confused me because I didn't understand if they're trying to make it distinction between this and Saturday Night Live. Why do you do a cold open
right.
with Alec Baldwin?
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I was like, what are we doing here?
They violated the whole format. They violated the whole formula. And if they're going to bother doing that, I don't know why they don't just bring Saturday Night Live back. So that was stupid, and I didn't need that. Also, it wasn't funny, and I have worries about their ability to recapture the Trump Alec Baldwin thing that they did last year. I think maybe they should have signed off on that with the singing in the finale last season. They should have gone, okay, either we're not going to do Trump at all, we're going to be grown up and we're going to pretend that this is not happening, or we're going to treat it in a different way, or maybe they should have brought in someone else to do it. It to me, that should have been the end of the Baldwin Trump, but that's not the way that anyone handles anything involving success. No one ever goes, that was a good thing we did.
Let's end it. Yeah, let's end it. Yeah, that's not going to happen. I will say this for the cold open, although you know the material wasn't all that great, and like you said, they violated the structure completely. Like when it had a cold open, when they opened with the cold open, I was like, oh no. I mean, that's just not. I thought it was a Weekend Update, but I did. I have to say that Kenan Thompson made me laugh during the.
Oh, absolutely, for sure, he was the funny part of it. And but again, if that's going to be the case, why didn't they just go, like, at that point? Why not say, within the context of the Weekend Update, we've got an exclusive interview with the guy behind Donald Trump, and then they could have even done footage featuring Alec Baldwin. And they could have shown it in the upper right-hand corner, and it would have been part of the format.
Right.
And then they could have let Kenan be the star of the sketch as opposed to not.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So that was my thought last week. And the week before that, Tina Fey ate sheet cake. That's not something you want to say three times
fast. No, it's not.
Say something wrong.
Well, I mean, you know, what can you say about that piece, man? It was great. It was great, and I've watched it. I've watched it four or five times, and I just think it's fantastic. And you know, it was clearly the highlight of summer edition thing. Clearly, that was the best piece that they've done.
Well, okay, but the question is, more impressive piece of baked good eating? Rooney Mara and the pie in A Ghost Story, or Tina Fey and the sheet cake on Saturday Night Live. Make a call.
Well, you know, I like the pie scene. I got to tell you, it's pretty amazing, and it goes on forever.
It does, but for all the time it went on, I think she eats like six bites of pie. I think if we're being perfectly honest, she barely gets through like an eighth of that pie. I assure you, I've eaten more pie in a single sitting without even thinking about it than Rooney eats in that scene. Whereas Tina Fey goes to town
that
cake
and
also eats a few bites of grilled cheese.
Right, exactly. But the grilled cheese moment where she dips the grilled cheese in was fantastic. Also, when Che jumped in and grabbed some of the cake too, that was just a great moment too. It was great. I also... It was last week or the week before. I think it was last week. Last week's episode had Cecily Strong as that crazy character, right? When she had the eye patch.
That was... It was either last week or the week. I can't distinguish between them. Last week definitely had the Alec Baldwin. The week before definitely had Tina Fey. But other than that.
Last week I know also had Pete Davidson doing his thing. But I love that character that Cecily Strong does. I really, and that made me laugh too. And the addition of the weird eye and the eye patch also cracked me up. So.
I mostly Tina Fey has made the last 2 weeks worthwhile on that for me, and you know, still watching it. And especially since John Oliver has been off now for a couple weeks, and Samantha Bee has now taken a couple weeks off, and Jim Jeffries has taken a couple weeks off now. I feel like maybe the landscape is perhaps less oversaturated, and so what they do this week might feel less instantly dated because there haven't been as many people doing the same thing, but I highly doubt that. I think
Trevor Noah's back. Trevor Noah is back.
He is, and he's super. So, but I think that being slightly late and slightly behind on the jokes is just what Che and Joe's do at this point. So even if no one else is making the jokes, I suspect you will still feel as if somebody else has been making them.
Yeah. Okay. I think we agree on that. And as far as SNL goes this season, the season opener is Ryan Gosling. If I remember correctly. Yes.
It is. And he's a good sport. I think that he will be just fine. I feel like they haven't announced yet if there are going to be new cast members, have they? Or did I miss
that? No, they haven't. Not yet. No.
Okay, well, that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're going to have to. I mean, there are three openings now, and you would think they'd fill them.
They definitely will. Sometimes they just wait until a little late, but it feels like probably they ought to be doing that in the next week or two, I would guess.
Right. Okay. Dan Feinberg is here. We got to take a break for the news, and then we'll talk more with Dan, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. More TV talk coming up after the news right here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studios, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Triple Play Thursday, One Artist, Three Songs. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. In a little bit, we're going to be playing the aggravating SNL trivia game and also talking about things that make you cry. And Dan Feinberg, I'm going to get back to a conversation with him about TV in just a couple seconds, but I just wanted to let you know that all day today, we're asking WGN radio listeners to participate in our Day of Giving to benefit the victims of Hurricane Harvey. Text Harvey to 90999, that's Harvey to 90999, to make your $10 donation to the American Red Cross, or you can call 855-999-GIVE. Standard message and data rates apply. Thank you very much for your generosity. Please give. Okay, let's get back to the conversation. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter is with us. We talk TV every couple of weeks, and we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
All right. Very, very good. Okay, so I was just scrolling through my Netflix account and adding things to my list, you know, and I noticed I noticed Disjointed, and I see that you reviewed it. Tell everybody what Disjointed is.
Disjointed. See, marijuana cigarettes, they're known as joints.
Oh, what? Really?
So, I feel like your listeners may not know this, so I'm telling them. And so because the show is set at a marijuana dispensary, and because the characters are a little wacky, the show is called Disjointed.
Crazy.
I'm letting this sink in for everyone. So anyway, that's what the show is. It starts Kathy Bates, and Kathy Bates is very funny. And it's this one, unlike Me, Myself, and Irene, is Me, Myself, and I, not Me, Myself, and Irene, which was Jim Carrey, right?
17 years ago when that movie came out, yeah.
Indeed. This one is Chuck Lorre. It's Chuck Lorre doing a multi-cam comedy for Netflix. So there's a lot of swearing, and that's odd for a multicam comedy. There are also random animated sequences that are used to illustrate one of the main characters' military PTSD. That's a little bit odd. There are a lot of random things happening in the show that are interesting. The main show itself is a very broad pot comedy with a lot of jokes about how marijuana makes you forgetful and basically stuff like that.
Oh,
so
boy.
It's not great. It's also not awful. It has things about it that made me chuckle. It's got a good supporting cast, a lot of relative unknowns, but then also Nicole Sullivan is in a recurring role. A bunch of familiar faces pop up, but yeah, they sent out 4 episodes before the start of the season, and that was what I based my review on, and I haven't gone out of my way to watch additional episodes because there is too much TV.
Yeah, I did put it on my queue, but it's not high on my priorities. See what I did there?
There?
I did the word, I used the word high, see? All right, well, let's talk about a couple of interviews that you've done. You've been doing some really cool interviews with some of the Emmy nominees. And what was it? Was it fun to talk with Zach Galifianakis?
Zach Galifianakis was, well, he began the conversation. It was, thanks for taking the time, I told him. And he's like, well, they forced me. So I was like, oh, is this going to be awkward? But the answer was, no, not at all. He was just being honest, I guess.
Yeah.
He was actually very interesting and thoughtful. He talked about kind of the differences. He talked about his awareness of how limited the audience for Baskets is, which we have talked about on many occasions.
Yeah.
But his sort of awareness that it was always going to be a small audience and that it was always going to be a particular kind of audience. And he talked about how he liked aiming for that kind of audience, and that it was more like the kind of things that he's done in stand-up over the years, where he always has been a little bit odd, challenging, off-putting, whatever you want to say. He's always been a little on the experimental side in that, whereas the great mass of viewers know him primarily from the Hangover movies still. And so he talked about how he can tell in the look in people's eyes between when people are going to come over and tell them they love the Hangover movies versus when they're going to come over and tell them that they love Baskets.
Right.
And I like that. I like the very real awareness. The way he put it was that Hangover fans were going to pull off his pants, whereas fans of Baskets would just whisper in his ear that they like Baskets. And I think that's a very good description.
That's
of
absolutely
how those fans would be different.
Absolutely so, right. Absolutely, that's a great way to put it. Absolutely.
So he was really good. I enjoyed talking with him. I don't want to say surprised, because you know he's a talented guy. There's no reason why he shouldn't be an interesting interview. But yeah, he was really good and thoughtful.
That's great.
I enjoyed chatting with him.
And you guys did talk about Louis Anderson's performance, correct?
Oh, of course we did. And of course he's a huge appreciator. And he talks about how when he cast the role, he really just kind of, he had the voice in his mind for what he wanted Christine Baskets to sound like. And he thought it would be interesting if that voice came from a man playing a woman. And that was pretty much all the thought that they gave to it at the time. And then kind of gradually, as he's seen what Louis Anderson has been adding, it's all been Louis, and that's been something that they've been able to expand as they've gone along because of kind of the amazement of seeing what Louis Anderson has brought to the table, because it's a great, great performance, as we tell you every few weeks, and hopefully some people listen.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, you also talked with, speaking of FX, Ewan McGregor, who is nominated for his double role in Fargo. Was it fun to talk to him?
It was, and it was funny because I talked to Zach Galifianakis and Ewan McGregor one right after the other in the middle of the TCA press tour, and I was only barely giving thought as I was scheduling it to the fact that I was talking to these two actors who play multiple roles on FX shows, which is, it's a pretty small subset that I was talking to them one after the other, and it was interesting because you were able to pick up on the different things that they said about playing these roles. And so Zach Galifianakis talked about the challenges of doing scenes with a stand-in and then turning around and having the stand-in suddenly playing the other character and himself playing the other character, and how sometimes disorienting it could be. Whereas Ewan McGregor talked about how Noah Hawley on Fargo had a different stand-in for each of the two brothers. So there was actually someone whose job it was to be Ray and someone whose job it was to be Emmett. And it wasn't just a random person filling in for whichever one happened to be absent. And Ewan McGregor talked about how that was the first time he'd experienced that in this kind of circumstance. And it made me think, that would be the kind of thing that would be a different idea for an actor and a different principle if you're a showrunner to say, this is how I want to get out the performances. And so I like being able to have those interviews kind of back to back. Yeah. And he said wonderful things about working with Mary Elizabeth Winstead and the other cast members. And yes, he was also charmingly, Scottishly Ewan McGregor.
Right. That's great. It's interesting. And also there is kind of a difference. I mean, obviously the characters that they play couldn't be more different. The four characters that the two actors play couldn't be more different, but they don't have as many scenes together. Ewan McGregor didn't have as many scenes as Zach Galifianakis has with his brother.
Probably not. I'm trying to think if that's true. I mean, I would say they both had a fair number. I think that it's notable how very similar Chip and Dale Baskets look to each other, and it becomes more sort of a physicality thing, or maybe small differences in hair and makeup, whereas Ewan McGregor had to do a whole transformation to play Ray and Emmett, and he talked about how the people on set treated him much, much differently when he played the more downtrodden Ray, and the people responded differently to Ray versus Emmett when he was one or the other on set. I thought that was a little bit funny, whereas I can't imagine that it makes any difference to anyone on the Baskets set whether Zach Galifianakis is playing Chip or Dale at any given moment.
All right. Okay. Well, we have to get to our biweekly Big Brother conversation. Did you watch last night's episode?
I did indeed. I am all caught up.
You're all caught up. And where are you on this one? I saw that you tweeted that you busted out laughing during the Raven subtitle sequence, which I agree with you 100%. I cracked up during that. Yes.
I am not usually a fan of that kind of thing, the let's make fun of the girl from Arkansas because she talks weird, but that was an exceptional piece of making fun of her.
Yeah.
So I applauded that. Also, I think probably Raven invites that. Also, I think that the show has been kind of scampering to try filling episodes when things have been kind of strategically dull. I think we've had, since press tour ended, basically every single week's vote has gone exactly the way that it was supposed to go from the first minute, and that's bad Big Brother. That's not supposed to happen. So I like that this week, because Jason is so stupid and bad at Big Brother, there's at least a chance that something random could happen, because I don't think he knows what he's doing, and either Paul and Alex are going to kill him, or anything could happen. And that's kind of what this season desperately needs at this point, is something unpredictable.
I agree with you, because it's, I mean, I still enjoy watching it, and, you know, I'm a Big Brother fan. You're absolutely right. Every vote turns out to be the same way. Every nominee turns out to be the same thing that you know. So every week, like, you know, obviously, I believe tomorrow Matt's going to go home. But that's going to open up another whole can of worms. And every once in a while, I peek in on Big Brother After Dark.
You say every once in a while, but I know that you're watching it 10 hours a week or however many hours a week it's on. I know that you live for Big Brother After Dark.
I check it out. I do. I won't lie. I don't watch the whole 3 hours. I don't, because it's on for 3 hours. I don't watch the whole 3 hours. I'll fast forward through some stuff. But evidently, for the viewers in the future here, and for you, Raven and Matt stage an insane fight that isn't real. So,
she's not a good enough actress for that to be a good idea.
So, I'm sure it'll be on, because I think Matt's going to get booted tomorrow. So, I'm sure they'll edit some of that stuff together tomorrow, or should I say tonight, Thursday night. I would imagine that they'll edit some of that.
Here's my question, though, regarding Raven. The first thing we were told about her, we were told that she's a dance instructor who's also a Ghostbuster.
Right.
Why has her interest in the paranormal not become a plot point this season?
I agree with you 100%.
But the most interesting thing about her when they introduced her was she's a dance instructor who also finds ghosts.
Right.
Tell me more.
Nothing has happened since then. So, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens tonight and who gets the boot. So, Dan, always a pleasure. People can read you at The Hollywood Reporter, and the interviews that we talked about, Ewan McGregor, Zach Galifianakis, those are available there as well.
Indeed.
And everybody can follow him on The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, at Twitter and Facebook. Dan, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for chatting. Sounds good.
Right, buddy, take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody. And we'll talk to him in a couple of weeks. Always fun to talk TV with Dan. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about things that make you cry. That's coming up right here on WGN.